Well, hello again to everyone, and welcome to the teleclass, The Outbreak Database, a Tool for Hospital Epidemiologists. My name is Paul Weber, and on behalf of my colleague, Dr. Syed Attar, the co-founder of this lecture series, I would like to say that we are honored that you have joined us today. We are also particularly honored to be joined by Professor Ralph Peter Von Berg. As you can see on the title slide, Professor Von Berg is a senior physician and faculty member in the Institute for Medical Microbiology and Hospital Epidemiology at the Hanover Medical School in Hanover, Germany. He is a very popular lecturer and a prolific author of articles published in reputable journals around the globe, but he is also something much more exciting. He is a man of ideas and some very big ideas. And even more than that, Professor Von Berg is a man who can take an idea and turn it into something workable and valuable. You'll hear more about one of these ideas in the next hour or so, and I'll let him get started now. It is my pleasure then to introduce from the University of Hanover, Professor Ralph Peter Von Berg to present The Outbreak Database, a Tool for Hospital Epidemiologists. Professor Von Berg, over to you.
Well, thank you very much for this very nice introduction. And good evening to everybody, or good afternoon, wherever you might be right now. It's my plan to talk about the Outbreak Database in the next about 60 minutes. And some of you might be aware that there is this Outbreak Database, but there might be quite a lot of you that have never heard of this database before. So I kind of structured my talk into four parts. The first one will be a little bit background on nosocomial outbreaks in medical literature and its impact. The second one will be about what outbreaks can do, that they will contribute to the prevention of nosocomial infections. In the third part, which is going to be the main part, of course, I will finally introduce the Outbreak Database. I'm going to show you some features about what it can do and what it cannot do. And finally, in the fourth part, I'm going to talk a little bit about application of this database, which has been very often used already for all kinds of topics. So I numbered the slides on the left lower corner. So slide number two, you're going to see the definition of a nosocomial outbreak, and I'm sure that you're very aware of this, that we are talking about a sudden increase in the incidence rate of nosocomial infections above the normal endemic level of infections. And usually such an outbreak affects quite a large number of patients on the ward, and some of those outbreaks, of course, may even spread over to other wards, to some more units or the entire hospital. And, of course, there are some few outbreaks that took place on different hospitals. So with the slide three, I would like to start the part number one of my talk about the nosocomial outbreaks in medical literature. In order to get an idea on the impact of outbreaks, I try to find out what's the prevalence of nosocomial infections anyway. And on slide four, I found a publication by Smith et al. From 2008 in the Journal of Hospital Infection. Actually, that was performed the prevalence study survey in 2006 already. And they showed, and this is shown on the slide number five, that the overall prevalence of healthcare-associated infections is about 7.6%. And they did quite a large survey. They included 270 hospitals from the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland. They had 75,000 patients, 20,000 surgical procedures. So this makes me believe that this is quite reliable data. There is one study from Germany back from 1997, which was also a countrywide prevalence study that came up with a 3.5%. So this is about the number of nosocomial infections that we are talking about. Now, of course, not all of those are due to outbreaks. Only some of those are. And I found two publications which are shown on the slide number six. Those are old data back from the 1980s. Unfortunately, I could not discover any new findings that take address this topic. But those two came up that about 5 to 10% of all nosocomial infections are acquired during nosocomial outbreaks, which is still quite a large number, as I think. When we talk about publication of nosocomial outbreaks, there is PubMed, one of the central databases available at the internet that you might also use when you're looking for medical literature. And on the slide number 7, I took a look at this PubMed and used the search terms outbreak and nosocomial combined. And this graph shows you the cumulative data of hits that were retrieved using this this search strategy. And you can easily see that up to, let's say, 1975 or something, there are hardly any articles retrieved by outbreak and nosocomial. And from then on, it starts growing. And the final, the very right part, 2006 and so on, with about 100 articles that are added to PubMed each year that deals with the outbreaks in hospitals. The question is, where do those outbreaks occur? And I also try to address this question a little bit, which is shown on the slide number 8. On this slide, you see the map of the world, and I colored the countries from which outbreaks were recorded. And you see that the three countries that have reported the largest number of nosocomial outbreaks are the United States, on the one hand, with about 700 outbreaks, and the United Kingdom, about 300, and France, with about 150 outbreaks. And the overall number of all outbreaks was about 2,500. So this is just an impression on the number of published outbreaks. And, of course, this does not necessarily reveal the actual situation. Just because countries did not report outbreaks here does not mean that there have never been any. There is some more to it, that outbreaks may easier be published in Western Europe, for example, or the United States. But you can see from the slide that an outbreak may occur anywhere around the world. So this is a worldwide problem, of course, that we have to face. Now, what can we learn on slide 9? We are now, what can we learn about nosocomial outbreaks? Now, I personally believe that they are very valuable as they contain information that may be used to prevent further outbreaks in the first place and single nosocomial infections as well. However, an outbreak situation is always difficult to understand, and this is due for several reasons. You can see on slide number 10 that the setting in which such an outbreak takes place may vary extensively according to the hospital you're dealing with. There are different types of sources. It could be an environmental source, or it could be staff, food, it could be medical products, drugs, for example, or it could be other patients or visitors that get pathogen into the ward. Of course, you have to deal with the different routes of transmission, contact, most probably the main route, but also droplets or airborne transmission. And there are some descriptions where vectors also transmitted the pathogen. And then you have the patients, and you have differences there too, as the susceptibility towards infections may even differ extensively depending on the type of patient that you've got. And when a nosocomial outbreak starts, you usually don't know where the source is. You might know about the route of transmission. All you see primarily is actually patients getting ill, and everybody is frightened. So I try to sum up this on the slide number 11, that from my point of view, nosocomial outbreaks are always an extraordinary situation. This is way beyond the regular type of work that is performed on the ward. They are frightening for staff for several reasons. One, of course, staff might be frightened to become infected themselves. On the other side, they might be frightened about responsibility and guilt that they may have caused the outbreak in the first place. Of course, when it comes to infections, there is an increased morbidity. It might even increase mortality patients when the infections occur, and costs derived for the hospital or in for the healthcare system. As I said in the slide before, there are very many unknown variables that may change over time and may be different in different hospitals, and it starts anytime, anywhere. You cannot plan when the next outbreak is going to take place. And finally, such an outbreak may also draw some public attention. I'm going to come to this in a second, but if the local media, television media, print media, get aware of such an event, this might also be a very difficult situation for the hospital. There is one article on slide number 12. I show you the front page of this, where my colleague Petra Gassmeier, who is the head of the Charité University Hospital in Berlin in Germany, and myself, we wrote an article about nosocomial infections and outbreaks of those and what may be learned when looking at those. And I think the main part, which I marked red here, is that a single outbreak, one single outbreak description is unlikely to give you a good impression about what to do and what not to do, as this is influenced by the local setting very much. However, if you do a systematic analysis and you use a large number of outbreaks with a similar a transmission route or a similar source or a similar pathogen or a similar setting, then you get a good picture about what's going on and what might be helpful in events that take place later on. So on slide number 13, it summarized the single outbreak description is not representative. We need a large number of outbreaks that are similar. Now, it's hard to get those. I can tell you this because I tried it quite a lot of times. And slide number 14 shows you that the number of outbreaks that may be used for such an analysis is rather low. And the biggest part of all outbreaks can and will ever hardly be used for a systematic analysis. And this is due to several reasons. On the slide number 15, you see what needs to be done, what needs to happen in order for an outbreak to be useful for further prevention. First of all, the outbreak needs to be recognized. The ward on the staff on the ward needs to realize actually that an outbreak is going on, that nosocomial transmission takes place, and this might be overseen quite a lot of time. And the second is outbreak reporting. Once the outbreak has been recognized, it needs to be published, and there might be several reasons not to do that. And the third part is the obtainment of such reports, and it might be hard to get all the literature that is available because they may not be published in for example, international journals. I'll try to get to this a little bit more in detail on the slide number 16 when I talk about the outbreak recognition. Now, you can imagine easily that the awareness of staff on nosocomial infections in outbreaks in particular might vary depending upon the type of patients they care for. So, for example, if you're working on a usual general medicine ward, this attention may be lower in comparison to outbreaks, to staff that's working on high-risk patient care, on transplant patients, on immunocompromised patients, so in high-risk areas. Of course, the number of patients that is affected by the outbreak will also influence the likelihood of detecting the outbreak in the first place. A small number of patients, two or three patients, that might be missed. However, if there is a large number, this will much easier be seen by the staff. The type of pathogen is important, as species from the physiological flora will not be recognized as easily as if there is a reporting of rare species that, for example, nobody has ever heard before. If there is an increase in such rare species, that's very likely to be detected, and of course this may lead to publication bias of those later on. And the severity of illness is also a parameter that I believe will influence the outbreak recognition, as a colonization only may be easily missed. However, if it comes to a real infection or patients die in the course of the disease, this of course will also alter the chance of getting the outbreak to its intention. On the slide number 17, there is an example of outbreak reporting that led to very great difficulties later on. In this particular outbreak, which got published in Lancet about 10 or 11 years ago, the authors report septicemias from pediatric intensive care units, and there were a couple infants, 28 children, got infected with Klebsiella. Some kids died, as far as I remember. And a little later, the authors published a second report about the consequences. And it was that the media, the local media, got aware of this outbreak due to the reporting, and they started to sue the hospital and people. And so this had some consequences that may suppress the likelihood of further reporting. Somebody has to keep this in mind. The slide number 18 deals about the outbreak obtainment. How do I get the data that has really been published? First, when you start at the basis, it's identifying the article. There are some journals, you might know this, that are only locally read, that are only available for a small audience, and then there are other journals, large journals, well-known journals, that you can find in internet-based databases. Of course, that's easier when you're looking for outbreak reports. And finally, when you find that this article actually exists, makes a difference whether you have a subscription to that journal or whether it's an open access journal. And I can tell you from my own experiences that the best articles are always in limited subscription journals, so I have always to wait a long time to get to those, or it costs a lot of money. Third part is understanding. Finally, you get the paper in your hand, and if it's English, I would expect that this can be read in the scientific community throughout. Other languages might be a little bit difficult, so publication in English would be desirable. And the final part actually is the most important, it's the content. When you look at outbreak reports and you look for a specific question, you will find that very often the particular characteristics that you are interested in, they are for some reason not mentioned in this outbreak report, and if this this article has been published several years ago, you will most likely be unable to get the information that you really are looking for. The problem of evidence, which is addressed on the slide number 19, should always be mentioned. Of course, you cannot do randomized controlled trials when it comes to outbreak research. All those outbreaks are always looked for retrospective. This is by definition too. And as I said, by the loss of time, you will always have a loss of information. And you have an ethical dilemma. You cannot, you know, put persons at risk on purpose. So you always look retrospective after the outbreak has taken place, and you have to live with whatever is given to you as information. And we are missing, unfortunately, a standardized manner of this outbreak reporting by which would be much easier to get an overview of all those characteristics. There is, in fact, the Orion statement, which I would like to mention on page slide number 20. Published by Stone and co-workers in the Lancet Infectious Diseases. And in this statement, they ask for a standardized publication of nosocomial outbreak reports. I have kind of a checklist where I have to put in all the information that may be relevant, and for an editor of a journal to look for all those parameters so nothing is missing. We took a look on the slide number 21 on the quality of outbreak descriptions that are available in the medical literature, and we found that most of those descriptions only are evidence level number 4, which is pretty much the quality of case reports. So there is definitely a need for improvement in the quality of outbreak reporting, as well as in the frequency, of course. Now, let me come to the outbreak database, which is going to be the central part of my talk today. On page 22, I would like to start introducing the outbreak database. Slide 23 shows you a screenshot of PubMed that I took a couple days ago. And you see, when you get in the search terms, nosocomial outbreak, you'll find about 2,300, 2,400 hits. Now, I can tell you that many of those actually do not describe a nosocomial outbreak. Just the first hit on this slide, you see, this is actually talking about some genotyping method, about strains that have been found during an outbreak some time ago. So lots of those hits will just not be what you're looking for. It's very, very time-consuming to get the articles that are important for your research. So there is a tool. I summarized this on the slide number 24. There is a tool needed for hospital epidemiologists, which I am myself, and infection control staff that works with us. Infectious diseases specialists, I think, should be interested in this. Any healthcare worker on the ward might be interested in this. Microbiologists, virologists, and I think there are many other groups of staff that would be interested in a tool that could make analysis of outbreaks easier. And the outbreak database on slide 25 is such a valuable tool. Now, you can look up this database in the Internet using the web address as given on the slide, outbreak-database.com. And the outbreak database on slide number 26 only includes real nosocomial outbreaks. That means that any outbreak report that got filed in this database actually describes a nosocomial outbreak and does not only deal with strains and typing methods, but only outbreak reports are in there. It is web-based, I said this before, so this is available from wherever you are. And, of course, you can access this database 24 hours, 7 days a week, so anytime. You may register as a user. If you do so, then you get the chance to use the advanced search mode, and I'm going to show you in a second what this means. One of the biggest advantages, in my opinion, is that the characteristics of outbreaks are filed separately. So you can search specifically for pathogens, for routes of transmissions, for infection control measures, for sources of infections, and all this kind of stuff. In order to do so, in order to search this database, you may either use free text, so you choose your own words, or there are some given search terms that you can also use when looking into this database. This database is run by university staff. Actually, it's Petra Gastmeier and co-workers from the Berlin Charité medicine in Germany that run this database. This might be important to know, as this is a non-profit organization. If such databases would have been set up by the industry, this might lead to another outcome, one could think. And last but not least, use of this database, even if registered as a user, is absolutely free of charge, so you do not have to pay any money in order to look into this database. To give you a little bit more of an impression what this database can do, I show you a screenshot on the slide number 27. You see here on the left-hand side different characteristics that you can look for. So they have the outbreak setting, the number of cases, the number of phases. Some outbreaks only consist of one phase. That's the usual case, but some get a second increase in infections later on, about the year, the species. You can see all those different characteristics that are named in the left box. And in the right box, I show you a distribution of the pathogens in as an example. So you see that there is very, very large number of pathogens addressed here, showing that this database comprises all kinds of outbreaks that have ever been published. To give you a little bit of an example on the background of the database and what's filed in there, the characteristics, the main characteristics are summarized on the slide number 28. At present, there are about 2,500 articles filed in this, and new files, new articles are added regularly, so this is a kind of a growing database, and anytime new articles get published, they are recognized by those and people and get added in this database. There are outbreaks from 78 countries filed from 25 different medical departments, which could be surgery or pediatrics or orthopedic or whatever. Sources, possible or proven sources of the outbreak, there are seven different times, and I'm going to come to this later on. Four main modes of transmission. I showed you this on the slide, the setting. And as you could imagine from the slide before, more than 250 different species are already covered by this database. This database also files if mentioned risk factors that might have contributed to the acquisition of infection, and of course the types of infection are also filed in there, whether it's septicemia, pneumonia, surgical site infection. The fatality rate, of course, is in this database available. And the infection control measures that were taken in order to terminate the outbreak, and there are 14 different infection control measures that you can choose of. The next slide, you see some more data, the year of the outbreak. Of course, this is important as outbreaks that are from ancient times might not be valid for the present, the year of publication. The type of study report, I talked about this about a little bit when I talked about the Orion statement. Outbreak duration is important, in my opinion, as outbreaks that tend to take long might need more rigorous measures at the very beginning. Number of outbreak phases, I talked about this. Type of facility, this is whether it's an inpatient or an outpatient or intensive care unit or whether it's a nursing home. A number of cases, fatal cases, age groups is something you should be aware of, whether we are talking about newborns, children, adults, seniors. And, of course, typing methods are also filed in this database, whether it's been phenotyping of antimicrobial profiles or it's been genotyping, which, of course, is much more reliable when checking for the same clone in different patients. When you use this database, this is shown on the slide number 30, you have the possibility to combine parameters and may use the terms that you're interested in. And you get, this is the lower part of the picture then, a link to the corresponding PubMed URL, if there is one, so you can get the abstract directly from PubMed. And, of course, you have, this is shown at the very bottom of the page, a chance to export your data into Microsoft Excel as a format most of you might be very familiar with, so you can file the search that you have just performed. One particular part I think could be of interest, and it's shown up on page 31. This is the group bifunction. You have also the chance to look for a specific parameter. In this case, I chose for you MRSA as a specific pathogen, and you can then add top lists that show you the in this case, the type of medical department in which this pathogen has most often caused outbreaks. So surgery was the type of medical department that was most often affected by MRSA outbreaks. So up to now, I showed you about the nosocomial outbreaks and the impact of those and the difficulties in retrieving articles and chances of the outbreak database to make this much more easier. Until now, there are a couple of articles that have been published based on this outbreak database, and slide 32 is now starting part number 4, and I'm going to show you some applications where this outbreak database has successfully been used already. There are five big points that I think where this outbreak database might be helpful. It's summarized on the slide number 33. First of all, and obviously, this could be a great help during an acute outbreak situation. So if you're experiencing an outbreak on your ward presently, this outbreak database might be great support as you can, let's say, put in the pathogen that you're dealing with, and this outbreak database might show you the infection control measures that are usually taken in order to help in this situation. The second part that we use in our facility almost once a week is education of medical staff. All kinds of medical staff, actually. You can use those outbreaks as examples about what to do and what not to do. The third point is about new insights in the role of pathogens. You can see that there might be some, for example, routes of transmissions that you have not thought of before because it's kind of uncommon and not known yet. The outbreak database has been used several times for preparing infection control guidelines, local guidelines, national guidelines, international guidelines. And, of course, there are several ideas of future applications, and I'm going to show you at least one example at the end of my talk today. Now, I would like to start with the outbreak database in supporting in an outbreak investigation, slide number 34. This was one of the first articles that was published by the outbreak database team, where should one search when confronted with outbreaks of nosocomial infection, and this is actually one suggested reading that I would recommend to do. On slide number 35, we addressed the question about MRSA outbreaks. And you might know that MRSA outbreaks might be caused by healthcare workers. And anytime such an MRSA outbreak takes place, the staff might be frightened whether they have caused this outbreak, whether they should be tested, and so on. So we asked a couple questions that I summarize on slide number 36. First of all, how often does such asymptomatic carrier among the healthcare workers actually do cause MRSA outbreaks? Second, do we need to remove the MRSA positive staff from patient care, and do we have to perform screening of staff when an MRSA outbreak takes place? Now, I'm going to not present this study to you in all detail, but just let me show you the results, which are printed on slide number 37. We found 191 MRSA outbreaks in total. Those were the ones filed in the database. And in 26 of those, it was, in fact, the way that MRSA-positive staff could have been the source of the outbreak. So we looked at those 26 in more detail, and finally, in half of those, 13 on the left-hand side, we found that there were there was a very, very low evidence that staff had spread the MRSA. Most likely it was not the case. two articles like data. I talked about this before. And only 11 outbreak reports were found where staff was confirmed as the outbreak source. However, only three of those were caused by staff that was colonized only. Mostly it was staff that was infected in the throat by a flu or something, coughing and spreading MRSA much more, so, which means that asymptomatic healthcare workers usually do not cause outbreaks. So this would be one way where this outbreak database was used. A second example on page 38 deals with the closure of medical departments. Now, closure is actually one of the last infection control measures that we usually apply, as it's shown on slide number 39. This is a very expensive infection control measure. Closing a ward for new admissions means a lot of financial loss for this medical department or for the hospital. So we wanted to find out, is there any type of patient that is more likely getting, where it's more likely that closure of a ward will be required, or are any pathogens that are so highly transmissible that closure of the ward needs to be done. And, of course, we screened the outbreak database by the infection control measure closure, and the results are shown on the next two slides. The slide number 40, we could show that pediatrics, which is highlighted green here, as well as general medicine wards, had quite a few significant lower closure, while in geriatrics or neurosurgery, closure of the ward became significantly higher necessary. And the pathogens are shown on the slide number 41, and it was actually Acinetobacter species and Streptococcus, norovirus, you know, those diarrhea in the wintertime, rotavirus, and influenza virus and Shigella. Those were the pathogens that when you're dealing with them, should make you consider closure of the ward as an early most time point, as this will be necessary in many cases anyway. And if it's necessary, of course, do it as early as possible in order to shorten up the outbreak. The slide number 42 is meant as some suggested readings that was published when the outbreak database was first introduced, as it may serve as good basis for the education of staff. And I'm going to show you some examples for this education option too. The first example that I'm going to show on slide number 43 is about nosocomial aspergillosis. Now, you know that invasive aspergillosis may occur, and that the prognostic for the patients is very sad. It's high rate of fatality, so this needs to be avoided whenever possible. And especially this pathogen is important to look at outbreaks, because then you can distinguish between a nosocomial infection that has really been acquired while being on the ward, or a non-nosocomial infection, and patients just accidentally were colonized by this pathogen. So the questions we look for, as shown on slide number 44, is about the mold species that can be found. Is there any species that should be looked at with caution more than the others? Of course, where are the most important mold sources? From which area does those mold spores spread into the hospital? And are there any high-risk patients, any patients at a special risk suffering from an invasive mold infection and maybe dying in this context? And this can be used to show staff, of course, what to do and what not to do. First of all, let's take a short look at the species on slide number 45. And as you might have expected, it's Aspergillus fumigatus, the main species that has been found. That's not very surprisingly, as this is one of the most mold spores that you can find in the environment anyway. But you see also that Aspergillus flavus and Tereus and some other species also were involved. So we would conclude from these findings that actually all types of mold species that are involved in outbreaks should be looked at with very, very much caution. The source is shown on slide number 46, and you can see from this slide, from the big blue and the light blue part, that construction work, construction and renovation work within the hospital or also within the close area around the hospital. That was the main cause for invasive mold infections and then outbreaks of invasive mold infections. And this, of course, tells you that when talking to staff, anybody has to look at those areas to seal them off properly so that a spread of mold spores cannot take place from there. The air supply system, this purple part of the cake, also important to look at the air supply, whether the airflow is in correct direction and filters are in place and properly working. And we looked at the patients, as I said before, on slate number 47. You see that the main part, about two-thirds in this diagram, this red part, were patients from hematology and in bone marrow transplantation units. So those are the patients mainly at risk, and you can see the corresponding mortality on the right-hand side, which was about 55% in this population. So getting an invasive infection with an Aspergillus had a risk of 50% not to survive this, this event. We also had some solid organ transplantation patients. We had some other patients with a severe immunosuppression, for example, steroid therapy or something like this. And still there are a small proportion of patients where immunosuppression was not known, and this this patient group still the mortality reaches 40%, which is quite high in my opinion. Another example for the education of staff where the outbreak database was used dealt with hospital acquired infections that were referred to contaminated substances. So any liquid, for example, that's used on the ward that may have led to infections. And, of course, shown on slide number 49, we were interested in the type of substance that was very risky. We were interested in the pathogens that were distributed and transmitted. Of course, we were also interested at what occasion all this happens. This is the main part for the education of staff, of course, as we are looking for things that should not be done or should only be done with caution. And clinical consequences, what happened to the patients. And I want to summarize those results for you, too. On the slide number 50, you see the type of substance that was involved, and it's a heparin or sodium chloride solutions that affected the largest number of patients, 450, or the second largest number of patients, 450, and the largest number of outbreaks. However, mortality was rather low, with about 5.3%. Unlike this, the mortality when having contaminated blood products, erythrocyte concentrates, was as high as about 50%. So this is a very, very risky substance. You can conclude from this picture also TPN, total parenteral nutrition, with a mortality from close to 50%, and propofol. You might have heard of outbreaks from this substance, which has a milky liquid content and, of course, supports growth of bacteria very well. So those were the substances. And the pathogens are summarized on page number 51, and you can see this looks a little bit like a rainbow. Just should tell you that all kinds of pathogens, of microorganisms were involved, including bacteria, including viruses, including fungi. So this is more or less no pathogen that has not been spread by a contaminated sepsis. Now, the main question when this should be used for education of staff, of course, is when did this take place? When did the substance become contaminated? And this is shown on the slide number 52. Actually, we graded the evidence from the outbreaks according to several parameters that I've not talked about right now. And the grade number, grade one evidence would be absolutely sure that this was the place where the problem occurred, and grade number four still is very likely, and everything else is somewhere in between. But you can see from this graph that by far it's the staff on the ward, the right column, which caused the most outbreaks, and this should be told the staff on the ward that they are the ones that have a great chance to contaminate substances when not using them properly. There are some outbreaks that were caused by the pharmacy of the hospital that mixes up some substances for several reasons. And, of course, there are outbreaks that have been caused by the manufacturer, where you have an extrinsic contamination of the product. And, of course, this affects a large number of patients all over the world, more or less, and it's hard to determine. But the main area where contamination occurs is a staff on the ward. And to close this point on slide number 53, it's the use of multi-dose vials, as you might have thought, that caused most of the outbreaks. There were about 209 bloodstream infections caused by contaminated MDVs. Hepatitis transmissions occurred. Several other infections, more than 800 infections overall, and there were more than 60 people dying unnecessarily due to this cause, just because large volumes were used multiple times, although the manufacturer said that you should use it only once. So this might be a valuable example when talking to medical staff and medical education. Outbreaks may also be a help when looking for new insights. In slide number 54, I would like to give you one example on this topic. We looked on outbreaks that took care on neonatal intensive care units, and we compared those to other intensive care units from adult patients. Results, I'm going to show you in a second. We look for the pathogens on slide number 55. Right now we look for the pathogens, for the infection types, for the sources, and for infection control measures. And the results on page number 56 show that the Klebsiella species and Serratia and Enterobacter and Escherichia and Salmonella, so gram-negative enterobacteria, were significantly more often found in outbreaks on neonatal intensive care units, but non-fermenting bacteria such as Pseudomonas or Acinetobacter were significantly less present. And we also find some differences concerning the infections, bloodstream infections or gastrointestinal tract or central nervous system infections. Those were the predominant infection types on the NICUs, while pneumonia or other lower respiratory tract infections or urinary tract infections occurred only rarely. Sources remained unknown significantly more often and were less likely to be caused by environmental contamination or contaminated drugs. And when looking for the measures, you see that patient screening, the screening of the newborns, and hand hygiene and isolating or cohorting infected kids and use of protective clothing, that those were the infection control measures that were significantly more often used on neonatal intensive care units. I told you that the creation or writing of infection control recommendations is also an area where this outbreak database might be of great help, and I'm going to show you one recent example of this too on the slide number 57. There we looked for infection control measures when dealing with Clostridium difficile, and you can see from the slide that there were quite a lot of authors from quite a lot of countries that were involved in this. Now, the background for this problem is shortly summarized on slide number 58. You might recall that a couple of years ago, we got aware of a new Clostridium strain having hypervirulence, having an increased level of toxin production, having an increased number of patients suffering from very severe courses of disease or dying from this disease. So this this led the European Center of Disease Control, the ECDC, to look for infection control measures, feasible infection control measures when dealing with this particular pathogen, and especially what to do when having an outbreak, as this highly virulent strain tended to cause many outbreaks worldwide. It's shown on the slide number 59. It's a screenshot from parts of this document that the outbreak database on the left-hand side covered in this red that angle. That was one of the databases that we used for retrieving the articles, and we graded levels of evidence here according to the outbreak description, and finally prepared categories for implementation in clinical practice. And this is one example where the outbreak database was one of the bases for an international infection control recommendation a couple of years ago. Now, at the end of my talk, I would like to give a short outlook on what may also be done using nosocomial outbreaks. On the slide number 60, you see some colleagues from Freiburg, Germany, that used a nosocomial outbreak for mathematic modeling. Of course, this outbreak was also filed in the outbreak database. And you can use this in order to look for risks of transmission under certain circumstances and settings. The slide number 61 gives you an impression on this paper, and please do not ask me about the mathematics, as I could not explain those to you in detail. but basically, you get an assumption on the number of patients that are get admitted or discharged, about the transmission rates, colonization rates, and underlying mathematical models will then give you an estimation on routes of infection, on number of patients that will be affected, and the effectivity of certain infection control measures. So I think the data from outbreaks will be very valuable when it's used in this type in the future more often. So I'm more or less getting to the end of my talk. I would like to summarize and to stress what I think is important, and I do this on the slide number 62. First of all, I think I could show you, and you might have known this before, that nosocomial outbreaks have always occurred worldwide, and I think most probably they always will. There will always be a chance that you get affected by a nosocomial outbreak, and you have to deal with this. And of course, when having such an event, this may have real severe clinical outcomes, morbidity and mortality, and economical consequences should also be addressed, especially in a country like Germany, where you have a diagnostic-related group financing. That means you get an amount of money for a patient, and any nosocomial infection that he acquires will not be covered by insurance companies, and this might be true for other countries too. So what I would like you to ask, first of all, that you please be aware of nosocomial outbreaks, because if you're not, you might miss them easily. Especially if their pathogens are common or the number of patients is low. So always be aware and look out for those. And finally, when you find those outbreaks, if you identify that you're experiencing an outbreak, now I realize that you cannot publish or write the manuscript while you're doing the outbreak investigation. Now, but once this is over, I would very much appreciate any publication, as this will benefit future patients. And if you're kind of frightened due to juridical consequences and court and medical and media. Might be an idea, and that was stated in the by Stone and co-workers also, that publication may be anonymous, so only the editor of a journal knows the name, but the data is there. And finally, to close this talk, I think the outbreak database is an extremely valuable tool when you're doing outbreak research due to several reasons, and I hope you agree with me when I showed you those examples. There is, and this is going to be my last slide, number 63, suggested reading, the last one, an article that was published in Infection just a couple weeks ago that summarizes the worldwide outbreak database and pretty much tells you what I just told you in the last hour, and you will find much more references where this outbreak has already served as a valuable tool. And by this, I would like to close my talk for today and give back to Paul Weber. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. That was a tremendous presentation. It's very fascinating the amount of inventory that you can wean out of such a large database. It can give you all sorts of information. Now, I'm interested, the information is specific for hospitals then. When we say nosocomial, are we saying specifically hospitals, or is there any long-term care data in there as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, it's not specifically for hospitals. It's for long-term care facilities, too. It's for nursing homes, too. It includes outpatient care. Of course, the main number of outbreaks is hospital outbreaks, just because those are the largest numbers that are available. But the you can also look for other facilities, too. That's true.
Professor Von Berg, thank you again for what was a fascinating lecture. And to all who have joined us, thank you for your participation today, and I'll look forward to hearing from you again very soon. Goodbye.